Chapter 3. The experiment was a success, but the patients died. "Why can't we help the homeless?" asked HBO comedian Bill Maher in 2019. If you look around Los Angeles, you'd think that either the homeless problem is getting worse, or camping isn't what it used to be. The audience laughed, and Maher pivoted to make a serious point. "You know, after World War II, there was a huge housing shortage in L.A. when the vets returned home and had nowhere to live," he said. "So the government found some empty space and, in a matter of months, built Quonset huts for 6,000 people, all for a total cost of what in today's dollars would be less than $18 million. Well, that was then." What Maher didn't mention, or perhaps know, was that the leading advocates for the homeless often oppose shelters. In 2011, a reporter asked Jennifer Friedenbach, "What's the solution?" "The solution," she said, "is making sure that we give every human being in San Francisco a permanent affordable house." "You can't just give everyone a house," the reporter replied. "You certainly can," said Friedenbach. "No, you can't," he said. "Every human being has a right to housing," she said. "Hold on," he said. "That's where we differ. But the fact is, first, you wanted shelters, and now the street people will not go to shelters." "No," clarified Friedenbach. "We never called for shelters." "The reason," Friedenbach explained to me, "is that if you ask unhoused people, they're not screaming for shelter, they're screaming for housing." In the spring of 2021, Friedenbach published an op-ed opposing a proposal considered by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to create, within 18 months, sufficient homeless shelters and outdoor safe sleeping sites for all of the city's unsheltered homeless. "One can simply take a look to New York City," she wrote. "Their department spends about $1.3 billion of its budget on providing shelter for their unhoused population, while thousands remain on the street. As a result, New York has a higher rate of homelessness than San Francisco." Housing First advocate Margot Cushell of the University of California, San Francisco, agreed. "The problem with New York, and I spend a lot of time with people working in the system in New York, is that they spend an estimated $30,000 for each person per year to keep them in shelter. That's not what we want to do. Because if you create the shelter and you don't create the housing, then people are just in shelter forever." Housing First advocates oppose shelter in Los Angeles. "Why haven't we solved homelessness?" asked Housing First creator Sam Tsemberis. "Because Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti has Andy Bell saying, 'You need emergency housing. These people need to be cleaned up. They need to be sober. They need Jesus before they'll be ready for housing.' I said, 'People should be housed, and then maybe they'll get sobriety and Jesus and the rest.' We're definitely on polar opposites of the whole thing." Advocates for the homeless at the national level similarly oppose more shelters. "I don't agree that we should be building more transitional housing," said the head of the National Alliance to End Homelessness. While some homeless people reject shelter, others seek it, particularly if it is of high quality. "In typical non-pandemic times, there are these huge lines that I would wait in with folks, sometimes up to 8 hours," said University of California, Los Angeles homelessness researcher Chris Herring, describing San Francisco's newest shelters. "Folks end up sleeping in chairs, night after night, unable to get a bed. You have 100 people there trying just to get a one-night bed." Most homeless people would prefer a studio apartment to living in a shelter, and many would prefer living outside to living in shelter. But people in shelters tend to suffer far lower rates of drug problems, severe chronic pain, psychological distress, and death than people on the street. "As a woman," acknowledged Friedenbach, "if I was suddenly homeless, yes, I'd absolutely rather be in a shelter than out on the streets, surrounded by a bunch of other women. I would feel a lot safer about that. I do think that there is a role that the emergency shelter system plays, but it should be a small component." But funding permanent supportive housing over shelters has meant that San Francisco lacks shelter capacity and suffers far higher levels of unsheltered homelessness than other cities with more shelter. Greater Phoenix has 700 fewer homeless people than San Francisco, but has 500 more shelter beds. Miami, a rare city that has had consistent success at reducing homelessness over the last 15 years, has 75% more shelter beds per homeless person than San Francisco. New York City today shelters 95% of its homeless after increasing its shelter population by 31,000 since 2005. In 2020, San Francisco had 3,530 shelter beds for 8,124 people experiencing homelessness. There were more than 1,200 people on the wait list for a shelter bed on any given day in 2019. It took 1 to 2 months to reach the top of the list, and a bed is only good for 90 days. San Francisco's leaders have thus deliberately chosen to leave a significant portion of the homeless unsheltered rather than sheltered, viewing shelters as a diversion of resources that could and should go to permanent supportive housing. New York has made the decision that everyone should have an exit from the street, noted Raphael Mandelman, a supervisor. San Francisco has consciously chosen not to make that commitment, and the conditions on New York streets versus San Francisco streets are somewhat reflective of what that means. Progressives in San Francisco have opposed creating sufficient shelter space for the homeless since at least 2004, when then-Mayor Gavin Newsom's Homelessness Task Force proposed a phase-out of emergency shelters in lieu of permanent supportive housing. Housing First homeless advocates have similarly contributed to the shortage of homelessness shelters in Los Angeles. The mayor is unwilling to put out bridge shelters because of backlash from some homeless advocates, said Skid Row shelter provider Reverend Andy Bales, referring to Sembris. He added that Housing First activists insisted on building a smaller number of expensive apartments instead of building cheaper temporary shelter units faster, with the $1.2 billion in tax-financed bond funding that voters approved in 2016. In the Los Angeles bond measure we passed in 2016 to build housing for the homeless, each unit was projected to cost $140,000, noted Marr. And now that we're actually building these apartments, the cost for each unit has risen to $531,000. About 40% of that cost goes to something the city calls soft costs, and I call bullshit costs. As a consequence, by 2025, just 7,000 units will be built for the roughly 41,000 homeless people in the city of Los Angeles. Housing First is a dogmatic philosophy, said Bales. I've lost friends. One of my closest friends is attacking me for pushing for housing that costs $11,000 instead of $527,000 per person. He can't get that we can't provide a $527,000 to $700,000 apartment for each person on the street. I've been in planning meetings where people said, everybody deserves a granite countertop. But that isn't going to work for 44,000 people. In November 2018, Proposition C passed over the opposition from Mayor Breed and many of the city's tech leaders. Salesforce's Mark Benioff's financial contribution and public advocacy for the initiative made the difference, according to researcher Chris Herring. As a result, San Francisco saw the amount it spends on housing and homelessness increase from $364 million annually to $1.1 billion between the fiscal year 2019-20 and 2021-22. During the campaign, the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness and its allies claimed that Proposition C would house about 4,000 people over 5 years, in the words of the Chronicle. The proposition would fund 4,000 new permanent housing units, reported SF Curbed. Prop C funds would house up to 5,000 and prevent the eviction of another 30,000, claimed Vox. The goal is 4,000? I asked Friedenbach of the coalition. Yeah, 4,000 exits that are permanent, she said. Ah, I thought, exits, not housing units. While Friedenbach called them permanent, San Francisco helped over 11,000 people exit homelessness between 2013 and 2018, even as the number of homeless people on the streets increased. While just over half received permanent housing or rapid rehousing, a rental subsidy, the rest were given a bus ticket to return to families and friends. And after a year of rental subsidies, some of those people become homeless again. It is unknown how many who had left returned. In mid-2021, city officials announced that the $1.1 billion would be used for 1,000 new shelter beds, 825 new housing units, 650 rental subsidies, 200 tents, and more outreach. As a result, the city's shelter bed capacity will rise from 2,875 to 3,875, which could reduce San Francisco's total unsheltered homeless population of 5,180 by 19%. But only if the newly sheltered then aren't replaced. In other words, the reason that there are so many homeless people on the streets in San Francisco is that both progressive and moderate Democratic elected officials and the city's most influential homelessness experts and advocates have for two decades opposed building sufficient shelters. And that is unlikely to change even after San Francisco starts spending hundreds of millions more per year on the problem, and might even get worse. In 2018, a reporter asked Mark Benioff if Prop C would create a magnet effect. It seems like one of the things that you guys are doing is you're creating a magnet for people to come to the city and be homeless, she said, because it's not a hostile environment. Everybody has talked about seeing people out on the street openly shooting up. That's just not true, said Benioff. I can tell you that's clinically not true. Our University of California at San Francisco, we've got the clinical studies to show you that when you give homeless people a home, their lifestyle does change. The study found that for the duration of 2.5 years, 86% of the participants who received subsidized housing stayed for nearly the whole time. It works, Cushell told the San Jose Mercury News. It improves people's lives. It keeps people housed. It ends homelessness. Full stop. The newspaper's headline read, "It works," wrote the reporter. "Groundbreaking data proves success of Santa Clara County homeless housing program." The Mercury News reported that the researchers say these findings are groundbreaking because they show that permanent supportive housing, which provides subsidized housing paired with counseling, mental health, addiction, and other services, is helping the county's most difficult cases. But there was a twist. The Housing First intervention did not reduce the rate of deaths. There were 37 deaths out of 199 participants in the control group and 33 deaths out of 224 in the experimental group. Though the samples weren't large, it was still a surprising and sad finding. It was deeply traumatic for the team that was directly working with the folks that were dying, for sure, said Jennifer Loving, the San Jose homelessness leader, who advocates for permanent supportive housing. You want to believe that there is a happy ending. The high death rate was demoralizing to permanent supportive housing staff. Theoretically, if people are getting housing and wraparound services, you should have a major decrease in death, said Louis Shequin of Abode Services. We're asking ourselves, why so much death when people are getting what they want? We have over 60 programs. We're the largest permanent supportive housing provider of this sort of service in the Bay Area now. We had trouble keeping staff because the people we attract to this sort of job really care deeply and got invested in people's lives, sort of like a life coach for people with an incredible list of problems. And then they die on you even when you house them? Housing First founder Sam Semberis said he wasn't surprised. "That happens," he said. "People are ill. I think the people would have died whether they were housed or not. They happened to be housed. They had a few comfortable months before they died, but it's not like the housing kills them. Like, they were going to die. Anyway, they happened to be randomized into the housing group, and now we know that they were, we know about them. I get it, but people come in with very complicated illnesses." "I think it's great for people to be able to die a decent death," I said. "But if we're selling this as improving people's outcomes, doesn't that kind of undermine it a little bit?" "No," said Semberis. "People would die anyway. It's just housing. It's not a miracle. People die. If they're homeless, people die. If they're housed, they die. So we should not expect permanent supportive housing to lower the mortality rate?" I asked. "Not given the preconditions that people come in with," he said. The evidence for Housing First turns out to be significantly weaker than its proponents suggest. For example, the much-lauded initiative to reduce homelessness among veterans was only 4 percentage points more successful than the overall decline in homelessness, when accounting for age, which is necessary to accurately estimate what is due to policy and what is due to demographic changes. As for Utah, its legislative auditor general concluded in 2018 that the 91% number was wrong, based on a sloppy use of incorrect methodologies. Before 2015, Utah had annualized its homeless count, meaning that researchers counted the homeless at a single point in time and multiplied the data by some factor. But after 2015, the state used raw point-in-time counts, causing a precipitous drop in the official population counts. Over the same period, the state also narrowed its definition of chronic homelessness in several ways, resulting in further apparent reductions. In reality, the homeless population in Utah increased by 12% between 2016 and 2020. An experiment with 249 homeless people in San Francisco between 1999 and 2002 found those enrolled in the city's Housing First program, direct access to housing, used medical services at the same rate as those who were not given housing through the program, suggesting that the Housing First program likely had minimal impact on the participants' health. Wrote a team of researchers, "Obtaining housing does not necessarily resolve other issues that may impede one's housing success," pointing to the lack of significant improvements in substance use and psychiatric symptoms over the 12 months that people were housed. The share of patients with severe substance use actually saw a modest increase. The problem with Housing First stems from the fact that it doesn't require that people address their mental illness and substance abuse, which are often the underlying causes of homelessness. Several studies have found that people in Housing First-type housing showed no improvement in drug use from when they were first housed. In 2018, the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine published a review of the scientific literature of Housing First. On the basis of currently available research, the report's authors wrote, with some surprise, the committee found no substantial evidence that permanent supportive housing contributes to improved health outcomes, notwithstanding the intuitive logic that it should do so, and limited data showing that it does do so for persons with HIV/AIDS. Semberis said he was not surprised by the findings of the National Academies. "It's not like housing creates improved health," he said. "You have to have a relationship with a nurse. You have to be educated on what your health problems are. You have to have a team that engages you and makes you an active participant in your own health care. I don't even know if that would stop the number of deaths." And, at least in the study funded by Benioff and conducted by Margot Cashel, which had those services, it did not. Housing First may even increase addiction and overdose deaths and make quitting drugs more difficult. Warned a multi-author review in 2009, one potential risk of Housing First's harm reduction approach would be worsening the addiction itself, as the Federal Collaborative Initiative preliminary evaluation seemed to suggest. The authors pointed to an experiment that had to be stopped and reorganized after the homeless individuals in the abstinence group complained of being housed with people in the control group who didn't stop their drug and alcohol use. They claimed that they preferred to return to homelessness rather than live near drug users. There is evidence that privacy and solitude created by Housing First make substance abuse worse. A study in Ottawa found that while the Housing First group kept people in housing longer, the comparison group saw greater reductions in alcohol consumption and problematic drug use, and greater improvements to mental health after 2 years. One reason for the surprising results, wrote the authors, may be that aspects of the Housing First intervention, such as the privacy afforded by Housing First and harm reduction approach, might result in slower improvements around substance use and mental health. Researchers have found ways to use housing to reduce addiction. Between 1990 and 2006, researchers in Birmingham, Alabama, conducted clinical trials of abstinence-contingent housing with 644 homeless people with crack cocaine addictions. Two-thirds of participants remained abstinent after 6 months, a very high rate of abstinence compared to other treatment programs. Other studies found that around 40% of homeless in abstinence-contingent housing maintained their abstinence, housing, and jobs. In a randomized controlled trial, homeless people were given furnished apartments and allowed to keep them unless they failed a drug test, at which point they were sent to stay in a shelter. 65% of participants completed the program. Three similar randomized controlled trials also found moderate to high rates of completion, and participants in abstinence contingent housing had better housing and employment outcomes than participants assigned housing for whom abstinence was not required. It turns out that over longer periods of time, Housing First may not even outperform contingency in terms of keeping people housed. In the spring of 2021, a team of Harvard medical experts published the results of a 14-year-long study of chronic homeless placed into permanent supportive housing in Boston. Most studies of permanent supportive housing, including the Cashel study conducted in Santa Clara, only study the newly housed homeless for a span of around 2 years. The study found that 86% of the homeless, who were referred based on length of time living on the streets, suffered from trimorbidity, a combination of medical illness, mental illness, and substance abuse. The authors found that after 10 years, just 12% of the homeless remained housed. During the study period, 45% died. The authors concluded that, because the chronically homeless had such higher rates of physical and mental illness, the supportive services essential to the PSH model may not have been sufficient to address the needs of this unsheltered population. I asked experts and advocates, how do we know that the homeless population won't replace itself if provided with housing? Said Randy Shaw, the Tenderloin Permanent Supportive Housing Provider. The question you're raising is one that never gets discussed. Somehow there's this sense that San Francisco is under the obligation that anyone who comes here, we have to suddenly house. There is an underlying logic that San Francisco doesn't really ever want to talk about. Said Chiquin, the permanent supportive housing provider for the Cashel study, I don't have a solution. I will acknowledge what you're saying. I'm not going to be a bullshit advocate who says, oh, you should just ignore that. It's real. There's so many stigmas and stereotypes that some of us in the industry were scared of telling the truth. I asked Steve Berg of the National Alliance to End Homelessness in Washington, D.C., a similar question. Let's say we build 100,000 apartment units. What's to prevent another 100,000 people from going from doubling up and couch surfing to become homeless and ask for housing? That will definitely happen, said Berg. And it's not what if, it's that will definitely happen. If you don't deal with the reasons people are losing their housing, then the system will never be able to keep up. Communities did really well getting people off the streets, but they haven't really thought about the inflow of people. Some longtime Housing First advocates suggest the movement has become too dogmatic. Advocates are mostly former homelessness housing and service providers, noted University of Pennsylvania's Dennis Culhane. They don't understand what professional social welfare systems look like around the world. I tell the advocates that I am not ideological about Housing First, and they should not be either.